Good morning, everybody. I'm Betty, and I'm an addict. And because I can, I'm going to wish Pat a happy 9th anniversary today. And the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship and the God of her understanding. And all the newcomers whose lives you've impacted, congratulations. And I just want to share something I found in my working step guide. This piece of paper here. And a few years ago, I did the Sunday morning meeting, and there was like 4 million people out there. And I was sharing about my brother. And anybody who knows my brother knows that he's my heart. And we used to keep each other safe. And when siblings are each other's safety net in a crazy, crazy environment, there's an impenetrable bond of love that often happens between that brother and sister. And I was standing at the podium, and I was sharing how we used to sleep. We used to share a room, and nothing happened inappropriate. But that was a little strange. That should have been the first clue, because I had a sister. But we shared a room, and we used to sleep with a butcher knife to see who would kill my father. We would take turns deciding who would kill my father if he came in after us. And because he was a raging, angry, screaming person. And even though beatings weren't routine, there was always that fear that it was going to be because of the anger. And so we shared that safety net with each other. And I was sharing that at the podium at the convention one Sunday morning, and talking about my brother. And I just said, my brother's my heart, and I love him. And he was sitting in the front row. He had driven up that morning. He's on the fellowship, but just to support me. And he goes, I'm here, baby. I got your back. And so I opened my working step guide, which is the information that I love the most to share about and learn from and everyone else's experience. And I see this 12-step brother checklist, stuff like honor your brother, worship your brother, always do what your brother says, always have desserts waiting for him, never pull out in front of him on your motorcycle when he's ahead of you. At 12 o'clock noon, face the east and remember how much your brother loves you. Have a great time, and God bless each and every one of you. Love my brother. So, I mean, he's such a dweeb. And I just love him so much. I snatched my mother out of a nursing home because I was going to be wanted for assault charges and maybe even homicide through mistreatment. And I'm like the last person in the world you want to mistreat somebody I love. So I snatched her, and she's at home with me, and she has a lot of needs, and he's there covering for me so I could be here today. And what an awesome thing. And I just want to share with you my clean dates, July 10, 1983. And it's a miracle that I stand here. I'm going to be looking at 25 in July, and I want to stand up for 25 so bad. I wish they would move the convention to after July 10 so I could stand up for 25. But I'll be here next year, you know, provided I do what I learned in the beginning, which is to come to a meeting, be of service when I have the opportunity, extend my hand to the most important person in any Narcotics Anonymous meeting, the newcomer, pray to the best of my ability, use a sponsor, and work the steps. It's really five easy things that keep me here, and I promise you, it is the easier, softer way. It's painful some days, it's joyous some days, and that's just simply life. It is truly the easier, softer way. And when you compare it to getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, let me tell you, it's a cakewalk. It's just new and unfamiliar territory. And so if you're new here today, I want to invite you to the miracle of recovery. I want to invite you to this miracle. I didn't get chosen to be here. I'm no extra special dope fiend. You know, I shot a lot of dope, I drank a lot of whiskey, tried to kill myself, and thought I was a gangster. You know? There's nothing spectacular about that. I didn't get chosen and plucked from the corner, especially to be here. What I got was invited to the miracle of recovery by my predecessors. And there weren't a lot of us almost 25 years ago. Actually, soon. There weren't a lot of us. And so the miracle is that I'm still here. Because when I got here, we had the little white book. And we had a lot of misinformed information we were giving each other about your marriage, your legal problems, and your medications. And I offer, maybe some of us killed one another. I don't know. But, you know, we were well-intentioned and misinformed. And today our literature helps us with that and our role in that, and that really our role here is about recovery from addiction. And my job is not to tell you where to live, who to love, how to raise your children, or where to work. And the 12th step relieves me from that in your life and really focuses on my job being to guide you through the steps in your recovery. And so I've learned a lot, and I'm really grateful to still be here. And what I learned is that how you will know that you have worked a third step to get ready is when you put pen to paper and begin to write your fourth step. That's how you'll know. And if you're not ready, it doesn't mean you failed the third step. It just simply means that you need to go back and give it some more attention and maybe look in a different direction and work with your sponsor on really making that decision to turn your will and life over and get ready to take the ride and get ready to do what I feel is the step that integrates you into Narcotics Anonymous and the depths of your recovery. I believe that it begins with that searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. And it's about getting honest to the best of your ability. And it's about being humble enough to be willing to tell the truth to yourself as you write that thorough and fearless moral inventory. And there's a lot of topics that are covered. I was taught, now remember, 24 years and 8 months ago, we were operating off of somebody else's literature. The text came out in 83, and it really didn't make it to the East until about 84. And so I was told to write, this is what I was told to write: who pissed me off, who I pissed off, and why did I think I did it? And chances are it was born of fear. That's really the way my first step went. And I also, in our literature says, in the basic text, it says that we need to plan to share this fifth step with somebody who would understand. It doesn't necessarily have to be a sponsor. And for me, this is my story. When I got here, the woman who had the most time in all of Central Maryland, where we had three meetings, had 11 months. Can you imagine your sponsor having 11 months? Well, I couldn't, so I went somewhere else and got this old coot with 26 years who had a pack of Cools here and a pack of Camels here, four cups of coffee and a dozen donuts at all times. And there wasn't nothing nice about him. I mean, nothing. He looked at me and he said, "You got shit for brains, sit down and be quiet, and if I need to know how to use, I'll contact you." He didn't have anybody he sponsored's phone number. He said, "You have nothing I want. I don't need to call you." And he said, "And if you want what I have, you'll meet me at step meetings. If we go out for coffee, you'll pay." Oh, my God. Me pay? And you know what? I said, "I love you. Will you be my sponsor?" And his name was Henry the Plumber. And let me tell you. And that old man didn't want nothing from me except for me to find a new way of life and live. He didn't want me to die. And so he loved me enough to tell me the truth about myself. And when somebody asks me to be their sponsor, the first thing I say to them is, "What do I have that you want that we can work toward? Because I need to know what you want to work toward so I can help you get there. And if you don't know, well, you better start thinking about it. And two, do you believe I love you enough to tell you the truth about yourself? I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to help you with recovery and the steps." And as a result of working the steps, you learn how to be a friend, because I've done the work. And chances are we might become friends, but it's going to take a learning process and working the steps before I'm going to let you into my life as my friend. And the third thing I'll ask you is, are you willing to buy this? I'm not buying it for you. And when you do and you show up with it, I know you're ready. And what a great way to ask somebody to go steady. Because we don't have to go sit over coffee like I did in the old days and look at each other like, "I don't know you. You don't know me. What are we going to talk about?" So you can start by working the first step with your sponsor and getting to know that person. But the script's already there, so you don't have to make anything up. You just go through the motions, and eventually the trust comes, the relationship builds, and when it's time to get to that fifth step, you should have a working trust. and knowledge of that person's integrity and soul, and be able to share and know that it's not going anywhere but between you and God and that person. And that's the beauty of starting out working the steps with somebody. And what this book says is that at any point time, we used to wander around going, what is the meaning of life? What is God's will? When do you start working the steps? Oh, don't worry about it. Just don't use. Well, the good news is we've evolved as a fellowship. And now it says at any point in your recovery, you can begin to use this guide. It just has to be done with a sponsor. So what an excuse to get a sponsor. What a great way to start working the steps. And what a great way to start developing that relationship. In the beginning, with a power greater than yourself, which for me was the example of people. And so my story is that because I, what time am I done? I know, but, okay. Well, just let me, but we're over it. Quarter of?
Quarter of.
Oh, it's an hour and a half? Oh, okay. So my story is that here I had this male sponsor, and he was kind of a mean old guy, and I had some sexual abuse in my story. From when I was a broken little girl, long before I ever picked up, my spirit was broken as a child. And I didn't know how to tell him about that. And I didn't know how, I just didn't know how to do that. And so our literature says, share your fist up with somebody who would understand. And at the time, I was getting outside help. Because I believed what I had been told my whole life, which is that I was useless, I was worthless, and I was never, ever going to amount to anything. And I knew and I was taught that if I didn't believe that I deserved the best, I would never act like it. And I would continue to use and I would continue to self-destruct. Because when I believe that I deserve love and when I believe that I deserve my recovery and when I believe I deserve the blessings that have been put in my life, I act like it. In order not to give them away through using in character defects. And so I know today that I needed somebody to help me walk through what I had been taught all my life about who I was, who I wasn't, and to really believe that I deserve recovery and to move forward. And, you know, I was really despaired when they asked me to speak on the fourth and fifth steps, because they're really not like the steps that I have a lot of passion for in my recovery. I like 6 and 7, I like 12, I like 3 and 11. And I thought, okay, but God has invited me to something this morning. And one of the things that I've been taught one of the things that I've been taught about relationships is that when one ends in my life, that I probably need to do a mini 4-step on it so that I can understand my part, not blame you, and do it differently the next time. I don't know about you, but relationships have been really one of the toughest areas of my recovery. There is nothing for me more painful than a heart that's broken in two and not knowing how to walk through it without using. I mean, I breathe it, I eat it, I brush my teeth with it, and thank God for the tools to get me through to the other side. And I also believe that in our fellowship, there's no such thing as a 13th step. I think it's some made-up shit by people who didn't work a 4-step personally. Yeah, because you know why? And I'm going to take the opportunity because I can. It's one of the privileges to having some time around here. If you're 18 and you walk in here and you drop your drawers, take responsibility. Nobody made you do anything you didn't want to do. Take responsibility. And if you know that you're the kind of person who self-destructs behind a broken heart and failed relationships, then don't do it. Take responsibility. Protect your recovery. Save your life. And when we go about the business of accusing and judging people who 13-step people, I'm sorry, but I don't know anybody who walks through the door with a healthy sexuality. Well, not many. I also, in almost 25 years, don't know anybody I know maybe like two or three people who didn't get in a relationship in their first year. It's a suggestion so that you can keep the focus on your recovery. However, if you fall short of that suggestion, don't let people judge you out of these rooms. This is about recovery from addiction. Do not let anybody keep you out of a Narcotics Anonymous meeting because they're in judgment of you. You're going to either get better or you're going to go out there and die. It's not our third tradition protects us from judging you because the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. It doesn't say to walk through the doors with that you're expected to have healthy behaviors in all areas of your life. That's why we work the steps. And when we go about the business, I believe, of the poor victim who dropped their drawers, oh, you poor thing, you only had a minute clean. Well, you're doing what you did out there. Do something different. You know, you're not a victim. It's the inability to take personal responsibility for my behavior. It's in our literature. So, you know, it pains me when I hear people take that judgment and I see that person walk out the door and never make it back. And I don't know whether they lived or they died. It's not my job here. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. And I had a personal experience once with somebody who slept with somebody that I loved. And it was somebody, you know, that I sponsored. It hurt me so bad, I threw up when I found out. I mean, it hurt my heart so bad. But you know what? I had to do some of the biggest big girl stuff I ever did in my life. Because I knew this person was afraid of me. I'm much bigger, and I'm prone to throw a right. And I had shared that what I wanted to do is beat her ass and screw her husband, but I didn't. I did. And it was wrong of me to do that. I was hurt, and hurt people hurt people. But I had to go to this person and say, because I knew that person felt scared, and I knew that person felt hurt by what had happened. And I had to rise above that and go to that person and say, honey, don't you ever let anybody keep you out of a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, especially me. And I meant that from my heart because that's what I've learned here through that fearless and searching moral inventory that allows us to see our part, allows us not to continue to repeat those patterns. The fourth step is all about looking at your patterns. And my sponsor says that God will continue to put people in your life over and over again to show you your patterns so that you might have the opportunity to change them. And you know what it's meant for me? A lot of single time. And I don't understand it because I think I'm all that in a bag of chips. And it's like, you know? And I've come a long way. For those of you who don't know me, I got here, I had no front teeth, a broken nose, a broken jaw, a broken leg, big red country western hair, monster makeup so you couldn't see the fact that I was spitting on you while I talked to you, and Daisy Dukes up to the crack of my butt so you wouldn't know I was having issues in a fancy rental car, and thought that I was hitting. You know? NA can get you lots of wonderful things. And these don't come out. But seriously, so I've come a long way. And seeing those repeated patterns, and I didn't choose bad people. I made bad choices for me. They weren't bad people. They just weren't, you know. They weren't good choices for me. And I have a friend who says, water seeks its own level. You know, and you're hooked up with somebody who's batshit crazy and lacking integrity and honesty and all those things, you got to look in here. You got to look in the fourth step. What are your patterns? What's your part? You know? And what I failed to say was one thing that the 12th step says is that we don't tell people where to live, who to love, where to work, or how to raise your children. I would offer, though, if you got to lie about who you're doing, You got to lie about the work you do for a living. You got to lie about where you're laying your head at night. And if you got to lie about the way you're raising your children, that it's in direct conflict with the spiritual principle of honesty. And your recovery may be in jeopardy. So think about it. Think about it. And what I know, what I've learned from the fourth step, is when I invite people into my life who haven't done any work and who lack integrity, I promise you their lack of integrity will impact your life. So don't make those red flags pink. They're not pastel. They're blood red. Blood red. See them for what they are, because they will smack you upside your head and bring you to your knees and make a punk out of you one more time. You know? It's just like the drugs. Just like the drugs. So in the fifth step, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. For me, I had to be willing enough to get honest, to look Betty in the face and say, this is who you are, honey. No more, no less. And if you don't want to continue to be this person, then you are going to have to tell on yourself. It didn't feel like a big spiritual event for me. It felt like a true confessions and no telling what was going to happen after that. Because, you know, I had some abuse in my life, and some ugly behaviors came out of that. Some ugly behaviors came out of that I was really, really ashamed of. Really ashamed of. And I thought I would never tell anybody in this whole wide world that I had hurt somebody else. And I kept hearing, your secrets will keep you sick. They'll take you out the door. And they could kill you. And if they don't kill you physically, they will kill you spiritually and they will kill you mentally. And then the only thing to do is to use. And I didn't want to die. You know, I died 3 times out there at the hot shot. And I had the kind of dirtball friends that would roll you up to PG hospital emergency room, empty your pockets, and leave you on the curb. You know? I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here. And so, looking back, when I see all the times that God intervened in my life and all the times that I was given another chance, when I heard that your secrets will keep you sick and they could possibly kill you, I didn't want to die. And so I had to get honest. And the first person that I got honest with was somebody that was giving me outside help. And then subsequently, I got female sponsors and I began to get honest with them about those things that I felt would keep me sick and that would cause me harm and make me want to use again. And then to admit to the God of my understanding. I suffer from terminal self-reliance, and I had a really tough time. I thought the third step said, okay, now you're going to be a sheep amongst wolves. I am the leader of the pack. I'm looking for all of you to be behind me. I am not a follower. I'm not a sheep amongst wolves. And I thought for sure I'd get eaten alive if I made a decision to turn my will over to anything. And you know, I took that third step with my sponsor, which our literature suggests, to kind of look at my perspectives and somebody who had some sense perspective and compare notes and come to an agreement. And so I had that. When I got to five, you know, to God, I had the God that I had worked on in three, you know, and that I felt that I got the courage from to do four. And so, you know, I prayed, and I was taught to go right to six as soon as I finished five. And I prayed because I knew, you know, that your six-step stuff comes from four, and your eight-step stuff comes from four and six. And I knew that those defects. My sponsor also has taught me that we have two emotions, love and fear. And from those two emotions, all things come. I can tell you everything that comes from fear, which is anger, dishonesty, blah, 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 blah. And all the things that come from love, which is, I believe, the spiritual principles that I've been taught to live by, compassion and tolerance and patience. And so when I get in that jam, you know, I can say, what does it come from? Which feeling does this come from? Does it truly come from love, or does it truly come from fear? And so when I got to sharing with God, I had to come to the place of love. I had to come to the fact that there's a power greater than me that loves me and that cares for me, like our second step asks. You know, when I got here, it was doorknobs and plants and trees. I'm sorry. But bullshit. Our literature says a loving, caring power greater than you. It doesn't say a doorknob. It doesn't say a tree that could die from disease. It just says a loving, caring power greater than from you. And that's the sea of people that I see in front of me. That's the loving, caring power. Two never asks to identify a higher power. Never. Anywhere in the whole step. It says a loving, caring power greater than yourself. Three doesn't ask you to know what God's will is. It took me 19 years to realize that. It asks you to make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God. As your recovery evolves and your step work evolves and increases, that relationship and the knowledge of that relationship and the depth of that relationship increases. So when I got to five, I was operating on that decision. And I knew that the experience was to be born of love, not of fear. And so I was able to admit to God. And then I was able to sit down with a human being because I was all right with God with it and have that conversation. Because I knew the God of my understanding didn't judge me. And hopefully this person who was put in my life wouldn't either. And then I did that and I went right to six. And the wonderful, beautiful thing about six is you take that information from four and you go, oh my God, what do I do with all this? There's some stuff here, you know, cumulative, right? And you know, the sixth step in our literature suggests that we write down those defects of character. But the really good news is it suggests that we write the opposite of it. Think about it. What good is it for me to know everything that's just screwed up about me? You know, because the fourth step asked me to look at some assets too, but I got to tell you, that was hard for me. It's taken me a lot of years to acknowledge my assets and to admit them. Because seven says that's what we do, but to embrace them, because I felt it was arrogant. I felt it was contrary to what I'd been taught all my life, was you're nothing and you never will be and yada, yada, yada. So to tell you that I'm a high school dropout who went on to get a master's degree and graduate with honors and serve my country as a lieutenant commander is hard for me. It's hard for me because I wasn't taught that. But the sixth step says, write the opposite. And this is the blueprint for who it is you are to become and who it is that God would have you be, are the opposite of those defects of character. The instructions are right there. So please, if you're new, if you're scared of doing four and five, know that when you've thoroughly worked third, you'll put pen to paper and start four. And then you take that information, you get it up off of you, you share it, you move it on, and from that information, you go right to six. Thank you. You go right to six. You list it out. You write the opposite and say, okay, this is my chance. This is my chance not that when I have the opportunity to act on a defect of character, that I won't because I know what the opposite is. I have the information. And I have a choice today so that I don't have to continue to repeat those patterns in the fourth step and live that life of degradation, humiliation, all the things the first step talks about. So I want to thank you, the committee, for asking me. I'm sure God was working in my life today to talk about these steps. I want to thank each and every one of you for helping me stay clean today. And I just want to share with you that I invited you to the miracle of recovery this morning as a predecessor, as I was invited by my predecessors. And I want to promise you that if you keep coming back and that you don't use one day at a time just for today, no matter what, hold on, no matter what, to someone, to something, to your medallions, to your key tags, to something of love that somebody has said to you, the miracle of recovery will happen for you and will continue to happen for you. Thanks, I'm Betty and I'm an addict.
Thanks again, Betty. And our second speaker this morning is William.
My name is William, and I'm an addict. And I want to thank Betty for doing what she promised to do, which was to 12-step me. You know, because I wasn't feeling that good, and she did what she needed to do, and I feel so much better. The ironic thing about it is she came in the program the same month I did. You July 25th, did you say? 10. July 10th, and I came in July 2nd of 1982. And when you come in Narcotics Anonymous in July, you have hit the box. But I mean, that's a good month. The sun is out, and you know what I'm saying? And I came July 2nd. That's right after the money hit the street. That was Mother's Day. If you can't cop on Mother's Day, you're the sorriest dope fiend that ever lived. A lot of money on the street on Mother's Day, Jack. You understand? And so I really want to appreciate all the things that you said, you know. When we got here in 1982, I remember the only person I knew in the Central Maryland there was Big Norman. Yeah, Big Norman, you know. The teachers then were very few. There were very few teachers in Narcotics Anonymous, and they kind of sponsored the majority of the entire fellowship, you know, And it's true, when you were looking for people like Carmelita and Doreen and them, they didn't have when I got here, they didn't have five or six years, you know? And so there was very few people that had knowledge of step work. We stayed clean off of therapeutic community information. You know, shut the fuck up, put your hand on your knee. Your ass ain't grateful. You know what I mean? I mean, we was clean, but we had a headache, man. Yeah. You call somebody on the phone, they encountered your ass, you know. Curse your ass out. You know, and that's where we stayed clean, man. And it wasn't until I met Thomas Gordon Stark. I call his whole name because he's going on to the big meeting. I met Thomas Gordon Stark, and I had about, I don't know, I was trying to figure out a way to lead the program because I'm what you call an intellectual failure. I need to be able to explain to you why I stink, why I'm dirty, why I need $2, you know. Why I need to sleep on your floor. You know what I'm saying? I need to be able to put that thing on somebody. You dig? And I need to be able to say, well, I tried the program and the steps and it didn't work. And that's where that was my plan for exiting Narcotics Anonymous, because y'all wasn't making too much sense to me with this coffee drinking and lying and talking about y'all bleeding some steps and all this old kind of crap, and that y'all was happy, you know. But what I've come to find out is some people will get to their steps early, some people will get to them, you know, halfway, you know, after 10 years, 15 years, and some people will never get to them. That's what I've come to find out in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. But the question is one body to a casket? That ain't your business. You need to worry about your casket. And so I took a personal interest in my funeral. Because when I got here, a guy says, not only was your funeral close, it was going to be soon. Soon changed my whole perspective. Because I came to Narcotics Anonymous July the 2nd of 1982 because I understood that my funeral was going to be that week. How you gonna stay alive one more week? And I got to scratching my motherfucking head. I owed Roland Brown Bay who my sponsor informed me, he said, man, you're the only person I know that took from that man and lived to tell about it. You understand? I owed a whole bunch of people that had murder beasts. And I don't have one. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a marksman. I shoot very well. I have shot at people with the intentions of missing. All except one guy. You know, I tried to shoot him, right? I tried to bust him in the head. But I was shooting through the car. I was sitting in my buddy's car shooting through his windshield, right? Into their windshield. You know, and I was in the military. We were riding around with a car with bullets, bullet holes all in it and shit. You understand? On and off the base in North Carolina, right? Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. But anyway, this thing about the steps, you understand? I really didn't believe in the steps. But one night, you understand, it became very clear that it was time for me to leave Narcotics Anonymous. I had a girlfriend who had a man, and I had a wife who had a man. And I was terminally hip and fatally cool, and I was semi-gangster. Without the steps, ain't nothing left but the code. And you supposed to straighten that even with the steps. You know, I don't know, you know, shit, when the code gonna jump back up anytime. You did, but I knew that particular day, you understand, that I set out to straighten that thing with the code. You understand? And I went in the place where my wife was, you understand, and dude was sitting at the table, they were sitting there drinking beer. You understand? I asked her to come in the back room. You understand? As soon as she got in the doorway, I turned around, I hit her with a left hook. I forgot to bring her lunch. My wife could fight. But I knew that when I hit her. But I hit her good. When I knocked her down, her dress flew up, and I wanted to change the topic. So that's when I found out that damn, I ain't had no dope in 9 months. That's what when I looked down on the ground and all of a sudden, you understand, I got an erection. That's when I realized that you got another problem separate apart from narcotics. Something wrong with you. You out of order. So I got in the car and I left, and a little man on my shoulder said, man, you's a faggot. You ain't get a murder beef. What the fuck is you doing in the car? So I was about to turn around. Then somebody said, man, why don't you try that old program bullshit? Try the program, boy. You know what I'm saying? You know, she already boned him. Your girlfriend already with this. Now, what you getting ready to do? You know, the steel had been shut enough for me to know about it. Y'all know when they shut that door, bang! Good God Almighty. You know when you locked up? Every time I can't get back from court, I don't know how much time I got. I got to ask somebody, what'd he say? I don't know what that motherfucker said, man. I'd be dizzy as a mug, man. You ain't got no dope. You got a number to do. You know what I'm saying? Good God Almighty. I still like dope, boy, but that damn iron still be ringing in my head. Bang! Shit, when you coming back, open the door. Yeah, anyway. So I ended up with this dude, man, Tom Stark. Tom Stark took me, you understand, it was 1983, right? We went from 1 to 3 in about an hour. Next thing I know, I was on the 4th step. Which directly opposed It served two purposes for me. It directly opposed what I thought the program was supposed to be about. I thought that he was violating the program because you're supposed to go slow. But the second thing it helped me do is say, I say, well, as soon as this, I finish with him and get this over with, I can get back to shooting Harum. You understand what I'm saying? So come on with it, man. Let's hurry up and get this, you know what I mean? And then he broke down on his knees and got to praying. And that time I was real cool. I looked at him. He said, Lord, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. I said, damn, he really praying. Relieve me from the bondage of self. Then I was looking around, seeing if anybody seen me. Because I'm too cool. I'm too cool to let you know, I'm coded up. You know, I'm a gangster. I can't let you. I want y'all catch me praying and shit, man. It's a dude across town with my wife. I'm in here praying. I can't let you catch me doing this, man. Because you gonna tell me what the fuck is you doing. You ain't got a murder beef yet. All soldiers get a murder beef. I came in here with low self-esteem because I ain't have a murder beef. But anyway, I was one of them people that could never do their fourth step unless I was in the presence of my sponsor. I didn't have the focus. I didn't have the attention. I didn't have the perseverance. I could never. And one thing that I knew is that I never was going to do the steps. You know, I knew that. You know, so in order for me to get something done, right, in order for me to escape the funeral that was coming my way that week, now was important, N-O-W. You understand what I'm saying? Because I also understood that I was going to get back to Harum, but I was going to fulfill the mission of my personal funeral. You dig? Because that was the only reason I showed up in Narcotics Anonymous from Jump Street. This the safest place in the world is somebody after you. And I suspect somebody after everybody in here. I have never got sick into, yeah, maybe y'all did. You know, but when Poindexter was in the White Law and he shot that dope and he said, when I die, this is the way I want to go, I agreed. I don't want to die from cancer or a car wreck. Dope is the only way to die. You understand? And I'm hoping that, you know, if I die, I get cancer so I can get some Oxycontin. Anyway, that lets you know how sick I am, because I still like dope. You dig? Yeah, that's why I come to conventions and meetings and talk to my sponsor, pray and meditate, help people, right? You know what I'm saying? Because I got a dude on my shoulder that ain't never been to a meeting. And he keep talking to me. He's sitting up there right now. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's sharing. That's right. That's right. So anyway, I got through the fourth step with my sponsor, man. I kept going up to his house to write. Kept going. And he lived on 16 Park Road. And the task became of how you gonna directly go up his house? How do you drive up his house? I mean, that's major shit. You understand? How do you pass all the people? You understand what I'm saying? You know what I mean? How do you get past your sexual drive to get to your sponsor's house? You understand? When it's at least six people, you could be performing. You understand? Some type of, you know, Harry Carey thing with, you know. You understand what I'm saying? How you get up there when you can figure out a way to double your money? How can you get to your step work? You understand? Because there's a lot of stuff to get between the step work. You understand what I'm saying? You did, but he had us praying every day. He said, Lord, in doing my fourth step, guide me so clearly that even somebody as stupid as me could understand. Motivate me from the top of my head to the bottom of my balls. I stopped right there. My father's a Methodist minister. I have never heard them put a body part, especially your balls. Man, that's blasphemy. You got the balls in the prayer. And he simply told me that when people are aspiring to reach higher goals, which is the steps, right, is a transcending experience, you must abstain from sexual behavior. Abstain from sex. Put your balls in the corner. You understand? Go. You don't need that right now. You understand? The balls is not an issue when you had the mayonnaise top. I wasn't doing no hitting after that oil. I wasn't looking for no sex after that oil. You understand? I didn't need no bra for nothing. You understand? Every gal I knew got in my goddamn way. You understand? The dope boy show in town, he got the dope. I find out who he is. You understand? Three hours later, old fat gal with all the stuff, she done took the dope boy and gone. She come back, she in power. Hot, damn it. You understand? Y'all was messing up my thing. You did? But anyway. So I was able to start going to my sponsor's house, and the challenge was my perfectly, what he called my perfect excuse-making machine, right? I used to call him and say, man, I'm going to be late, but I'm going to be up there, right? And a couple times I didn't come because I was in the pursuit of making myself happy. You understand? See, you can be trying to make yourself happy by ducking the program. You dig? And I was in pursuit of making myself happy for that moment, and so I said, damn. And what happened is more unhappiness came my way. You dig? And so I finally figured out that maybe you should keep your appointments because you're never going to keep them. See, I'm never going to do the steps. That's why you should do them, William. Because you're going to die this week. You know that, right? Because you're going to mess this program up. You are going to... See, there was no such thing as a relapse in my vocabulary. It's only I copped. You're going to cop, will you? So why don't you try the program? See, I don't know if I'm not going to cop today. I'm thinking about it. You understand, is it a good day to leave this mother? And the little man on my shoulder say, hey! I said, damn, I better go talk to Betty. Because I've seen what people look like when they get back. You know, and some of them get back on paper. Damn. I got every obituary that I've been here for 25 years. I got every obituary of anybody that died in the program. I've never threw the obituary away. You dig? And every now and then, you know, because I'm so disorganized, I'm looking for a pair of socks. But damn, there's Betty Spivey. You understand? But the one that really get me, and I don't know where it is right now, I run into it, is Yvette's. That's the one that really gets me. Ooh, because she was fat to death. They brought her out in a body bag. She would be at all the conventions all over the world, special events. But they brought her out in a body bag. And she had about 14, 15 years. I said, William, you know, that's your kind of thing. That's your kind of play. That's your kind of behavior. I said, damn. So I'm trying to put some protection on my dumb ass. Because you can't get no dumber than me. I don't know a whole lot about the steps. I can talk about them, but when I look at my feet and I look at my footprints, it doesn't necessarily write them. I say, good God, you sure gave a hell of a mother. You made a hell of a tape. But it wasn't about your footprints. Because them steps you've been taking for the last week, they don't look that proper. They don't look that godly. They don't look like you following a sponsor. They don't look like you praying and meditating. So I kind of keep track of my own footprints. You understand? For that matter, I've made a distinct difference between the four step and the 10 step. I ain't taking no more four steps. That's on y'all. That's the way I perceive it, right? I take 10 steps. I've taken, they told me, an old dude told me, he said, man, why you keep taking 4 steps? And I said, well, I'm supposed to do a 4-step every year. And he said, well, what are you looking for? You dig? He said, man, you do the 4-step one time, the best you can, at the place and time you are, and then you leave it alone. He said, you don't go back once a year, find it, open the jar back up to see what's in it. Now, I heard people say you peel like an onion and all that kind of stuff. That might work for you. But one year, I went and I hadn't done my 4-step that year, and I started getting depressed because I hadn't done my 4-step that year again. Right? Anyway, he told me you live in the 10th step. You dig? And you do a 10th step of your current past, right? The last 6 months to 12 months, and you kind of start maintaining right there. Now, I know a lot of people disagree with that, but I'm saying one body to a casket. I'm talking about my casket. You understand what I'm saying? So anyway, they said that inventories are sort of like the same in basics, except for the time frame that you take them in. One is an inventory of the past, the other one is an inventory of now and the current, in the last 12 months or whatever the case may be. You dig? But anyway, I finished the 4th step and I said, damn, right? All this stuff, and I've been to a lot of 4-step meetings and I've seen people, make a platform out of the 4th step, and make a sermon out of the 4th step, but it really is a fact-finding and a fact-facing thing. It's really not the drama that we've made it into being, right? It's a systematic way. You understand that we go about taking an internal spotlight on ourselves, a look at our patterns and our behavior to see what we should keep and what we should get rid of promptly without regret. This ain't doing me no good. You dig? Even though Shorty said that this is something you should keep. Even though Shorty, right, who got his hand in the hands of the Grim Reaper, this is the Grim Reaper's main man. This is the Grim Reaper's, you understand, lieutenant. Sitting on your damn shoulder, explaining the steps to you. And I'm sitting there like, damn, that's some hip-ass shit. Because Shorty tight. Shorty got it all laid down and shit. He got the gear on. He got the shit that she was talking about, the Daisy Dukes. You understand? Shorty got the gold too. You understand? He got the latest. You know what I'm saying? Sucker motherfucker. You let somebody take your gal, shit faggot. Hey, you got a pistol? ain't that well yet. I get to that later. Microwave recovery. That's all Shorty, man. Shorty find new ways for slick stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Pointing at everybody else. But you mentioned that casket to Shorty and see what he do. Shorty, you ready to get in the casket? When they first lock your ass up and Shorty come up, he be walking slow then. He say some shit like, you all right? You done some shit and said some shit that you shouldn't have said at work, and you done got some shit that you didn't want. You broke as a mug. Shorty say, you all right? This what we gonna do now. Shorty don't never run out of shit to say. But anyway, the next thing that happened was, he said, Lord, and doing my fifth step guided me so clearly that even someone as stupid as I can understand. I said, why does mother keep saying I'm stupid? Right? I'm stupid because God has given me gifts. God has given every addict gifts. Every addict claims to have the gift of gab, the gift to hustle, the gift to get, but yet we're using our gifts to sabotage our own happiness. They said that a gift misused is a defect. So we got so many gifts. You understand? We were supposed to be basketball players. We supposed to be in this. We supposed to be in that. You know what I'm saying? We live on the edge of potential. That man, you know he got potential. You know she got potential. Well, what happened to your potential? Two bags, please. You understand? What happened to your potential? Man, fuck my mother. Man, I hate her. She did this to me. She did that to me. Why is somebody always doing something to you? What does your fourth step say that these people did to you? Or did it say how much you was doing to other people, not only then, but now? You doing it now. You gangster now. You talking about people now. You sitting in your chair having a discussion now about somebody. About how to set them up. About how to hurt them. About how you want them to fall so you can see it. You're doing it now. Why? Because we're an addict. It says in our literature that basically we the same. The nature of addiction is always the same. The nature of an addict is always the same. The only escape we have from ourselves is these steps. And we don't particularly like the steps. If you don't believe it, go to a meeting that got three meetings. Go to the open discussion meeting, then go in the back and look at the step meeting. The open discussion meeting is busting at the seam. The step meeting, they give them the little room and send them to the back. You understand what I'm saying? You understand? And that's where it is. You dig? Everybody is over here. And it's always been that way. You dig? And it's slowly but surely, right, we gravitate. Sometimes we don't. But you got to look at the numbers. You dig? But anyway, I didn't fit. The only reason I don't fit is because I want to shoot dope. You dig? I'm not one of them people that I think some people can stay clean without doing the steps. It's been proven. But not only do I want to stay clean, right? I want to have a comfortable life. I want to have life that simulates somebody with some level of maturity. You understand what I'm saying? I look at people, man. I went to my sponsors one day, and somebody had not only taken his wife, they had sex with his wife, and they had beaten his wife up. Right? And I went over his house. He said, had you heard that? And I said, heard what? And he told me that, right? And it was about a couple years before he died. And I wanted to offer him my pistol. Because the program ends right there. You understand? And how much time I got? Five. And Shorty was on my shoulder. He was running the thing down, right? And so Mark always talked about, Mark Lyons, he did too. That's my second sponsor. He said he always talked about his nephew that wore the bulletproof vest. And he said, my nephew just left here. Shorty said, God damn, we in power now. His nephew wore a bulletproof vest and carried one of the MAC-10s. Right? So I said, man, I want a front row seat to see this thing get straightened out. You dig? But Mark said the next thing came out of Mark's mouth is when he said his nephew said, let's go. And Mark said, go where? And he said, we're going to straighten this thing out about your wife. And Mark said, I'm going to a meeting. Would you like to go? So I gave somebody else my ticket. Wasn't gonna be no action. Wasn't gonna be no drama. Wasn't gonna be no Mac 10. Wasn't gonna be no get slapped in the face with a Mac 10. That thing wasn't gonna get straightened. How you not gonna straighten that, man? So I didn't go to the meeting with Ma. Neither did his nephew. Y'all don't went too far with this program stuff, this step stuff. But when we go back to the other literature, that dude was having the exact same problem. Mr. Brown was hitting his wife, and Mr. Brown told his wife that he was hitting somebody. And you know, this is the stuff to get us. You dig? So anyway, I saw Ma about 6 months later. I came into the meeting, and he raised his hand. He was back there laughing and stuff. And I looked. Now, this is my sponsor. This the dude that's guiding me that I call every morning that I'm supposed to be listening to that I love so much, right? But the truth of the matter is, he was happy 6 months later. I would have sabotaged that thing, chopped somebody up, and went on to the penitentiary. You dig? So anyway, this four-step stuff, if you don't take care of it, you know, she did a beautiful job on the fifth. Y'all know how to miss the timer. If you don't take care of this stuff, right, even after you've taken care of it, don't y'all know that it's springtime again? Fall is going to come. So all I'm saying is, sunshine, rain, joy, and pain, it's all coming. You dig? There's going to be deaths. There's going to be broken relationships. There's going to be somebody who sleeping with your people and all this kind of stuff, right? You're going to wake up ill, see? All this stuff going to happen. You dig? Operating under those conditions without the steps is very difficult. Yeah. Operating under those conditions with the steps is still difficult. But it gives you an opportunity, at least, to move into damage control. You dig? And if you can move into damage control, I've seen people fall, like me. You understand? But you will get back up. The steps will rise you up. The people who are practicing the steps that's in that meeting will help you get back up. You understand what I'm saying? Your prayer and meditation will pick you back up. You understand what I'm saying? Your desire to operate under adverse conditions with an attitude of perseverance, joy, and commitment and will get you back up. You don't have to get yourself back up. Ain't it true, Rudy? You ain't got to get yourself back up. Ain't it true, Gail? They took some of the hardest hits this program could give anybody, which is the loss of a child. But they got up, and I praise you every day, baby. I look at you, I love you. Ain't that right, Go-Go? I love y'all. Peace and love.